Oh, yeah, it's the Bob Charles Show right here at www.kinetic-hi-fi-radio. Around the world in 103 countries and counting. We are doing so cool, some crazy things now. It's Christmas time. Hey, look, we're getting a little giddy, but hey, look, it happens, you know? It must be all those candy canes I got stuck in between my teeth or something. But, you know, I tell you something. This is a great time. It's a family time. It's a time when everybody looks at each other and says, hey, weren't you here last Christmas? Don't do that. Don't do that again. See everybody every month. This is a better thing. You know, call them up on the phone. Say, hey, you know, remember me from Christmas? Hi, how you doing? I mean, this is a good thing. That, you know, start getting your spirit, your energy and things that out there. That get people into knowing who you are. And talking about people who know who they are, I would like to introduce Jack E. Churchward. Is that word? Yes? Okay. And I also have Sherry from the last show still on the phone because the two of them have the same publisher and they also are friends. So, Jack, meet Sherry. Sherry, meet Jack.
Hi, Jack.
Howdy, Sherry.
How you doing?
I'm just fine.
Good, good, good. Jack, you know, I just did an article for Examiner.com on your book, Lifting the Veil, and I have gotten just an amazing response to it. I love your book, and I know that Bob's listeners today are going to be so happy to hear the things that you're going to share with them.
Outstanding. Thank you. I did get quite a bit of email from your article myself.
Good, 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 good. And I can't wait. You know, Bob, Jack and I, because we have the same publisher, I've been honored to be able to be a speaker at the same time that he's been a speaker at a couple of different conferences. And the way that he presents this information is just amazing. If there's anybody who is skeptical as to whether Lemuria was an actual continent or not, I mean, he has got it covered. The work that he has done, the evidence that he has produced, the hard evidence, is just amazing. Well, I could do a show about Jack's book.
I tell you something, Annette, and I don't know whether Jack knows a lot about this show and that yet, but I mean, Lemuria and Atlantis and Egypt, I mean, that's all something that's been talked about quite a few times on the show, and that only because, like, let's face it, when we think about our history or where we came from or what makes us what we are, came from those areas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
So, Sherry, thank you very much, Annette, for being on the show. You can hang out if
you want to
there in the background, or you can, listen to us on your
computer. I'm going to listen on the radio, and I'm going to turn the spotlight over to Jack because he so deserves it, and his book so deserves it. And I want to thank you for having me on, and I'll be in touch in February with you, Judy, and Jamie.
There you go. And by the way, Monday for Jamie, okay, the number's 843. You already got it, 843-300-1399. Call in.
I just might.
There you go. Do it.
I just might.
Don't be chicken.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Now, let me
Thanks
tell,
again, Sherry.
Let me tell everybody a little bit about Jack. He served 6 years in the United States Navy and went back to school to earn a Bachelor of Science degree in electrical engineering and has over 30 years of experience in aerospace and defense. He worked on both manned and unmanned space and military platforms, a fourth-generation engineer and patent holder. His great-grandfather was James Churchward, who wrote a series of books on sunken Pacific Ocean continent of Mu. Jack has researched the life and theories of his great-grandfather to create a more complete understanding of James Churchward and his theories. The first book, called Lifting the Veil on the Lost Continent of Mu, Motherland of Men. Jack has been researching materials that looks at rarely seen 1927 book on the stone tablets. Now, this, Jack, we're definitely going to touch base on, believe me. Found by William Nevin near Mexico City, which led to another book, his second book, published in 2014, brand new book. It is going to be so cool. It's not funny. It's called The Stone Tablets of Mu, which I'm really, really excited that's going to come out in 2014 because you're right in the right spot at the right time.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you see the things that just came out from Mexico?
No, I haven't.
They had tablets, too, Annette, that they just found in Mexico, Annette, that the government just released, and they had that in their cache for about 80 years.
Well, we might be talking about some of Niven's discoveries.
Could have been, but these were, yeah, the ones that were brought out in the conference, I believe, in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually pictures of spaceships, like saucers, and a beam of light down and pushing away a meteor from the Earth and things like that. It was written on the tablets, and the tablets have been in vault for 80 years, and now Mexico says, well, I think it's time.
Wow.
Could you imagine?
They might have been discovered by Niven in the Valley of Mexico there.
Uh-huh. Yep. So, I mean, when you talk about Lemurian, I mean, I can just imagine who visited them.
Actually, my great-grandfather only referred to it as Mu, and he never said Lemuria.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequent authors obviously have taken it upon themselves to rename it Lemuria, but I think the term is probably interchangeable by now.
The producer wants to ask you a question. Go ahead.
Hey, just a real quick question. You said Mu, and I may be wrong. My recollection may be failing me, but weren't the Mu also the speaking tablets in the Sumerian myths?
I don't know. My great-grandfather's origination of the word Mu, or the colony of Mu, or the birthplace of mankind as Mu, was found from some tablets that he did he translated in India in the late 1860s, he wrote.
Oh, cool. Very, very cool. I just thought in my head it seemed like an interesting correlation that they would both be referring to tablets. It's either Mu or Me. But anyway,
well,
sorry about that.
Well, the tablets that James uncovered were actually done by the Nakhal.
And oh, wow.
The name of the continent that were written about, or where the Nakhal Brotherhood came from, was the lost continent of Mu in the Pacific.
Wow. Well, thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt.
You didn't interrupt. That was a good question.
No worries.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah. See, even Jack says so. So you're safe. When you go to the book, now this was the first book was called "Lifting the Veil on the Lost Continent of Mu, Motherland of Men." Now, what do you mean by lifting the veil? Does this mean that telling people something they didn't know before?
Well, I was hoping. What I attempted to do in the book was my own attempt to gather research on his 1926 Lost Continent of Mu, Motherland of Men. And what I was trying to do was go through and research where the different points came from, what he was stalking or staking everything on, to make sure that I understood where it came from and what the veracity of that information was. And so I wanted to make it. Unfortunately, it's too long a name.
you think?
Just a bit.
Yeah, it could be. You know, hey, but
I lived and learned.
Yeah, but it's not that bad though, really, though, because you know, look how many books are out there right now and that have two names. It actually could have been one name, but they cut it in half so it wasn't so long. So, yeah, you could have it Lifting the Veil on the Lost Continent / Mu, Motherland of Men.
That's true.
Ta-da.
But that was the title of his 1926 book.
I know.
Attempting to go through in order.
Well, what you really have to do is, now you knew what your great-grandfather did, Ned, when he did the book. Ned, did he actually go to areas and do any kind of research, Ned, on, for instance, did he go to Hawaii and say, like, hey, guys, what do you know?
I believe that after he left Sri Lanka, he did make a few trips through Australia, New Zealand, and the South Pacific for quite a few years. His cousin is William Brown Churchward, who wrote a few books on his consulate in Samoa.
Wow.
And so it was quite possible that he was there with his uncle for a while and listened to many of the tales and legends and folklore that abounded in the islands.
So he actually went back to find out where the islands were.
I believe so, yes.
You know what's really funny, though, because I don't know whether you're – I mean, I know you probably see it all the time anyway. They constantly say, well, they found. And I'm still scratching my head. Like, where was it really? I mean, you know, it could have been a huge continent, maybe the size of Australia, that sunk. We don't know. We weren't there.
That's absolutely true. Perhaps I should also state that I don't agree with everything my great-grandfather wrote. I'm still evaluating it myself.
Well, being in the space business, though, you should have a little bit of touch on things like some of the mapping and things that come off some of the satellites.
Correct.
That you can actually see further than the top of the ocean. You can kind of sort of go to the bottom of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
From space, and that you can actually see whether it would be some kind of shape of where something was or where something sunk.
Well, those maps have been around since I was a kid, so yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
And is there areas around there that look like it could have been connected? I mean, in my mind, and I always say, like, it was either connected to a bigger body of land by, like, one of those, what do they call them, like a step of islands, and that went to the larger place, which would have been Mu.
Mm-hmm. Well, my great-grandfather wrote that he believed that Mu collapsed due to the action of Archean gas belts that were underneath the crust, and they collapsed due to volcanic activity, and that's why Lemuria sunk. I'm not sure that I completely agree with that if you believe in the theory of plate tectonics.
You can believe in that, and you can also believe in the other thing about Atlantis and Mu not getting along well together on the same planet.
That's not anything my great-grandfather wrote about. He wrote that there was no savagery before the collapse of the civilization of Mu, and that since Atlantis was a colony of Mu, savagery ensued there as well upon the collapse. But then again, the calamity that took out Mu also took out Atlantis.
So you think it was on the same line?
That's what my great-grandfather wrote, yes.
Okay. Well, there's another question coming from the control room, believe it or not.
I know, I'm all in here today. For somebody like me who's not familiar with Lemuria or Mu, what was this civilization?
Well, maybe I should start at the beginning and state that while my great-grandfather wrote that while he was on famine duty in India in the late 1860s, he saw some inscriptions on the side of a temple wall and began to closely examine them and started to query the rishi of the temple. And they soon became friends, and the rishi started to teach him some of the symbols, and eventually their friendship blossomed into the opportunity for the rishi to bring out some clay tablets that he, as a member of the Nakal Brotherhood, the keeper of the ancient information from Mu, showed him these tablets, and they started to translate them, and James Start repaired them and returned them. And the story in the tablets was that Mu was the original Garden of Eden, and that's where men had absolutely originated from, and that they were a special creation from the creator being, and they spread out throughout the world and colonized the world. And upon the collapse of Mu and their civilization, savagery ensued.
And what did the science, quorum, think about that idea?
Well, they pretty much poo-poo everything immediately after you say there was a Pacific Ocean continent that sunk.
Yeah. I love when you say that, by the way. I mean, you're so true. I mean, it's so good. I'm serious. I mean, I say it all the time, but not quite as eloquent. But the idea is, so many people, so many scientists, so many researchers, so many historians all say that the Eden that we've read about in books forever was in Africa. Whereas if you draw a line from where Africa is, it's probably on the same line as Mu.
Quite possibly.
Yeah. I mean, if you look, what is it, parallel line, I think it's about the same as like South Africa.
Well, some people believe that the actual Mu or Lemuria is much closer to the to where Sunanland is, down near Indonesia and Australia and whatnot, in that area, where they had a much greater area during the end of the last ice age, and that even though we can't get to it and see it, and maybe the conditions for leaving fossils were not apparent at the time, that maybe that that is where man originated and maybe moved over to Africa, or I'm still waiting to for them to find out what the story is with the new information about the Denisovans and the hobbits and the and the Neanderthal and humans and how we're all really part of the same genetic mix.
Yeah, there's already DNA test that I believe just came out, and I have to get in touch with that guest in it to see if that's true. That was taken out of a tooth of one of those elongated skull giants.
Mm-hmm.
And it was out of the tooth that they got some DNA out of it, Ned. So I'm waiting to see what that is. That's going to be on the show too soon. I want to find out where these people came from, because, I mean, somewhere, somehow, some record, like the ones, Ned, of Mexico, there was somebody from another world here with us. We weren't alone. Nobody just wiggled their nose and just poof, man.
Well, according to my great grandfather, there was the causes and conditions that created the human beings, and they as a special creation.
Well, I gotta agree. I mean, he's right. It just depends upon how you tell the story. I mean, it's, you know.
Well, he never really mentioned that there were individuals that came from a different planet. I have not yet to find that, but the instant understanding that we have might fit in with some of what the ancient alien theorists might prescribe to, and say that he just didn't call them aliens, but they were, because he really didn't know what they really were. So that's one possibility.
Okay, so now you talked about the plates that was bad, Ned. Is there anything about that that's in anybody's history? Is there any kind of fossil or anything? Is there anything found on the bottom of the ocean that could say that that's the reason why this went down, or that's where it was when it went down?
Well, according to my great-grandfather James, there were Nicol tablets, several sets of them all over the world, that were written down and to make sure that the information was continued on. Unfortunately, I'm unaware that anyone other than my great-grandfather ever saw them.
Okay, so we couldn't find them in a library, a museum, you know, any of those places?
From what I understand, no, not yet. But the tablets discovery a few years ago, someone sent me an email linked to an article that they had discovered the Nicol tablets in a temple in India.
Ah.
And I eventually was able to get on the phone and speak with them and ask them to please send me pictures. And it is indeed unfortunate that the pictures he sent had nothing to do with the Nicol tablets. It was some of that one was Tamil writing from a temple, obviously, in southern India, but another brass plate that he showed was in a Beirut, Lebanon museum right now. I mean, he didn't go to India to see it. He had to find a picture online, or maybe even in Beirut, to take a picture of this metal thing. So from what I understand, the Nicol tablets have never been found, but people have tried to reproduce them.
Yeah, and they don't even know what it looks like.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know. That's the baloney that's out there. It's roaming the whatever. As per your background in aerospace, have you heard, you know, a little bit of rattling around somewhere that somebody might have been here a long time ago? The reason why I'm connecting this, I'll explain to you why. The reason why I'm putting this together is because I believe that people, they came from Mu, they came from Atlantis, they were technically way ahead of us. as far as energy is concerned, light, crystal science, all those things. I think they were way, way, way ahead of us. And when those civilizations, you know, just disappeared, I think all the technology and all the education did with it. So we're digging right now.
Hopefully. Well, one of the problems with when everybody dismisses my great-grandfather's theories is they're completely throwing everything out, and he didn't write just about lost continent. The fact is that we all know that we're all human beings on this earth, and James, as he wrote, that we're a special creation, that we have special powers. Obviously, we have better mental powers than the other creatures, but he envisioned that we had a world that we all could get along with and that we could all tolerate each other and have fun and live long, prosperous lives. And unfortunately, when you dismiss all that, I think it's wrong to just dismiss that. The possibility that we can all get along together and instead of having all this fighting and violence and intolerance of each other.
Oh, you are so correct. This is like, I mean, come on, it's got to stop somewhere. I mean, I just heard, I don't know whether you were watching TV today, but something going on in Africa now. And, of course, they had it on CNN today that they had to bother the President of the United States on his vacation in Hawaii to tell him about what is going on in Africa. And I'm saying to myself, oh, wait a minute, are we the only ones on this planet that do policing? Why didn't CNN come out and say, like, hey, listen, the president of Australia, you know, had to be bothered on his vacation for something? No, it's always the president of the United States. I think there's too many people under the president of the United States that all of those guys really want to know, and this guy is just an actor. I mean, that's my feeling. You know, it's just coming from you know, the plain fact is you see what's going on and all of these things in it that are arc history. I'll bet that if there are any of those tablets left anywhere, it's probably in some vault either in the Vatican or in the Smithsonian.
Well, on the first matter, I have no comment about the man elected as President of the United States. On the other hand, it would be rather difficult. You were mentioning the Mexican plates, right, that they came out from the vaults with,
right,
the E.T. on them. That would be rather difficult. They didn't hush those up.
Oh yeah, so, they didn't do that at all. In fact, they actually publicized them as bringing them as you know, an awareness to people that they have been demanding these things for years anyway.
So that a little bit can slip through from time to time.
Yeah, but it's good stuff. You know, this is like you couldn't – the age, I guess they're aged. You know, they did some kind of a test on them or something. But they're old enough to be that old and that something like that actually did happen. And these people did, you know, actually depict the coming of this spaceship to there. So what we're going to do is in between we're going to take a little break. And then we're going to be right back because I want to get into the second book, which I think is pretty cool too, The Stone Tablets of Mu. So let's get into a little bit about what the book is, how it came back, and how you put the whole thing together.
All righty.
All right, Jack?
Okay.
We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is www.kinetichifi.com. You know that this is Christmas season. It's Christmas weekend. It's the one before Christmas. And what I want everybody to do, and that is just call up a friend. Call up anybody. You know somebody in there from a long time? Find them on Facebook. Call a guy up and say, hey, listen, remember me? How you doing? That's what you do. Meanwhile, we're going to take our little break, and we'll be right back.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells chime and jingle bell time. Dancing and prancing in Jingle Bell Square. In the frosty air, what a bright time. Go
gliding in a one-horse sleigh. Giddy up, jingle horse, pick up your feet. A jingle around the clock. Mix and a mingle in the jingling beat. That's the Jingle Bell Rock.
People are talking about the fresh new sounds of KineticHiFi.com.
We are from out of town. We have not just the best. We have heard years down here. We're from Atlanta.
Now, believe it or not, it's nice to call a radio station and know that at least the effort's going to be made. Most of you can't say that.
Tell us what you think. Call 843-606-1314 or email programming at KineticHiFi.com.
Welcome to Cruise Chevrolet on Rivers.
Chevy's giving more, and Cruise Chevy is making it better. Drive the All-Star Edition Double Cab 2014 Silverado for $299 a month. Smarter, stronger, and more capable with the best gas mileage in its class. You gotta test drive it. And at $299 a month, you gotta have it. Financing available and excellent selection.
You've got a friend in the car business.
Online at CruiseChevrolet.com and Cruise Chevrolet on Rivers.
As wounded warriors, sometimes coming home can be a battle in itself. Every one of them needs our support to meet the challenges they face every day. The USO provides Americans a way to offer that support to our wounded warriors and their families. Join us. Visit USO.org to learn how you can make a difference in their lives. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
Hey, there's no shortage of folks out there who claim to be website designers, graphic artists. It seems like every day you hear about a new social media firm promising to optimize your website and social media visibility. What you may not know is that very few of these folks have the experience and talent necessary to fulfill their lofty promises. As a small business owner, you know every dollar spent needs to have an impact, and there's simply no better way to set your business up for success than to trust your online needs to Charleston's premier full production service, Advent Designs. Advent Designs has a history of success and customer satisfaction, which is unmatched, and you can rest assured that your investment will see outstanding returns. Whether you need an intuitive new website, an eye-catching logo, a powerful new banner, or comprehensive social media campaign, Advent Designs is ready to help. Call Advent Designs today at 843-298-1619. That's 843-298-1619. Or visit the website at advent-designs.com. Advent Designs, the power of perfection.
Every day is a love day. You're Kinetic High Five, yeah. That's right, baby. You're listening to KineticHiFi.com.
The mood is right, the spirit's up, we're here tonight, and that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
Oh, yeah, you got the Bob Charles Show right here on www.kinetichifi.com and Pyramid One Network, which you can hear between Monday and Thursday, 7 o'clock on Monday, 10 o'clock on Tuesday, 7 o'clock on Wednesday, 7 o'clock on Thursday. However, Christmas Eve and Christmas, we are off. How about that, huh? Hey, we got a break all year. Not bad. But that's pretty good. Now, let me bring back my guest. Jack Churchward. Hi, Jack. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
There you go. Now, on the book, in the book, Lifting the Veil on the Lost Continent of Mu, there is a part of the book that's called Egyptian Sacred Volume, Book of the Dead?
Correct.
What is that?
James went through his interpretation of the Egyptian Book of the Dead and how it related to being actually a memorial to the people of Mu and the fact that Mu had sunk.
Wow, so there's a connection.
Yes, he believed that all civilization and all culture, although everything is obviously a little different, but he believed that everything originated in Mu, the lost Pacific Ocean continent.
It's similar to the pyramid.
The Garden of Eden, he called it, yes.
Yeah, so it would be the pyramidology, I think it's called, because they are all over the whole globe somewhere.
Yes.
And we've always, you know, it's funny, too. I don't know whether you ever, you know, delved into this before, but, I mean, it's pretty close to true that, like, for instance, the bigger pyramids now were actually water pumps. And a lot of the other parts in that were actually in Egypt that had to do with communication or telepathic communication. Kind of cool stuff.
I have read some of those theories, yes.
Yeah, and I mean it's too true. I mean, how would you find something that was designed exactly the same way all over the globe unless somebody traveled all over the globe?
Quite possible.
Yeah, that's I'm telling you, I wonder how much they got to the gallon. You know, it's like, hey, that was pretty good. That was a lot of traveling. Now, the symbols of Mu, are there really, I mean, do they have like an alphabet or are there symbols like pictures?
Well, James wrote that these symbols that he was taught how to look at, and he did mention in several places in his books that he couldn't tell you the whole story, but and he said anybody who told you they could tell you the whole story according to the symbols was a humbug. But he believed that he was taught a bunch of these symbols and taught how to interpret them in the Nikkal writings. And he believed when he found petroglyphs and whatnot, they were just a different ethnic group or a different group of the Muins wrote it.
Wow. So that's going back. That's like original education at that time.
Well, he believed that Mu was had its beginnings. They started their civilization 200,000 years ago, and that the crash and destruction of that civilization was between 12 and 14,000 years ago.
So that was an old place.
That's what they said, yes.
Yeah, it's a lot older than we are.
Well, they believe that it took them that long to uncover their mental abilities and be able to catalog it and work things through. And unfortunately, when struck by catastrophe, they were no longer able to continue.
James also had geological history. So geological history, would that be based on where the actual Mu was, or was it per relative to the rest of the world?
Well, his geological history went into some kind of detail about the gas belts that surround the Earth and how they collapsed and destroyed Mu and Atlantis and how they, at the same time, other belts raised up the mountains. He was of the opinion that the mountains are no more than 14,000 years old.
I was going to say, you think they're still there?
Who?
The belt.
Well, he believed they all collapsed and it caused the radius of the Earth to also be reduced.
Well,
and
we have
that where should be solid now is what I get from his reading.
We have. Well, there's things that I've actually been sent articles about amazing amounts of gas, like under the glass or under the ice, should I actually say, in the South Pole and North Pole. Whereas guys are actually going out, they're breaking through the ice, and they can light it. I mean, the gas can burn right up through the ice. I mean, this is pretty good. So, I mean, actually, what James had said is not far-fetched in that whatsoever, because if they can do it up there, then they can do it anywhere.
I would imagine.
It's the plates actually moving. And then again, what we're doing on this planet, like all our, go digging for oil and stuff, and that's not helping the plates any. Geologically wise.
I'm not familiar with that.
Well, when, let's say, another one we want to go into was ancient religious conceptions. Now, I don't know. This is a crazy subject, actually, because religious, did they have any kind of or passed down, through the different generations, that anything that they did as, say, rites, ceremonies, sacred mysteries, those kind of things?
Well other than having roofless temples, that's all James spoke about. And this is a very good question, because James didn't believe that he believed that today's religion were corrupted from what was originally taught back in this continent of Mu, because the Nicol Brotherhood had figured out that their religion was science and their science was religion. They had everything figured out. There wasn't a dichotomy there.
It's so funny that you should say that, because so many people in that today, I mean, even Indians, the Hopis, and that they do their ceremonies and everything else, and that they don't believe in anything that has to do with today's modern religion whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
They believe in the spirit. They believe in the sky. They believe in navigation by the stars. All these good things and that. But we don't, as we grew up, I think we lost something, as we grew.
Well, like I said, my great-grandfather believed that it was greed and other selfishness that caused religions to become corrupted. His original thought is that he writes that Moses actually was a trained adept, and so was Jesus in the Nicol Brotherhood. But when Ezra took time to write it out in Hebrew, he didn't understand the exact meanings or didn't have the training to be able to write it out properly, and so that's why we have the Bible we have today.
You think. And that's pretty complicated, too.
Well, that's what James wrote.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was definitely on. About the correlation between Mu and Hawaii. Is there any connection there?
Well, James believed that obviously that the volcanic islands in the Pacific were the remnants of Mu.
Oh, okay. So they came up because it went down.
Correct.
There you go.
That was what remains of Mu.
So, in other words, if we dug far enough, we'd probably find something.
There are researchers. According to James, yes.
Yeah, there are researchers that are over in Hawaii. As a matter of fact, the last article that I actually read was from someone that I had on the show from Hawaii, and they were looking for the pyramids in Hawaii. Of course, like anything else, they're hidden because so much overgrowth has gone over this. But they say that there is remnants of Mu there.
I did receive a phone call one evening on a Sunday evening, completely out of the blue, never heard of the person before, and gave them my email address and to send me more information. But they called me on the phone one Sunday evening and started to tell me about pyramids and some structures that they had just found in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I never heard any more information about it. I'd really, if they're listening right now, please tell me, call me. Send me an email, and so we can get this information out there.
I'll put your question on my blog.
Alrighty,
because I know they definitely do. They do read it because they write to me all the time. But the thing was that he went out with a camera crew, the one that I'm talking about. He's a researcher in Hawaii, and he went out with a crew, and they were going into all these places where ancient maps showed. This type of formation in the jungles. And they were going to these places to see if they could actually find a pyramid, because they know they're there. They just can't find them. Like I said, everything grew over them. for some reason. Or, like, as I said to him, I said, you know, I said, it's really, really great to be out, you know, hunting for something in the jungle. But what happened if some of the volcano activity that happened between that time and right now has actually swallowed them?
Yes, that's quite possible. Shorelines change remarkably.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that was one thing there. So, but they also say, and I think that Frank had said it in one of the books. I forget what part in it that I read, that they actually, ceremonies that are in Hawaii mm-hmm. were originally passed down from Mu.
Oh.
So some of that stuff, I mean, there is a connection somewhere. I mean, they didn't just become Hawaii. They got it from somewhere.
Absolutely.
So that would have been really cool. Now, on the second book, after reading the first book, what actually made you go to write the second book?
I'm glad you asked that question. About 2 years ago, someone sent me a PDF copy of a book that was never put into circulation, was never printed, was a handwritten volume given to his publisher. It was written for Christmas, 1927. And it was called Copies of Stone Tablets Found by William Niven at Santiago Ahuizacla near Mexico City.
Hmm.
And it sat in the UC Berkeley library for quite a few years. But somebody sent me a PDF copy of it. And in order to make sure that it gets a wider audience and more of the people who have studied James' material have the opportunity, I've provided a complete copy of that book, plus some history of the tablets, as well as how the tablets influenced James' further works and where the tablets in this work subsequently ended up in other works of James.
So it wasn't just he didn't just read a book. I mean, write a book, and that he had a lot of other stuff floating around.
Absolutely. He was a lecturer. He had over 40 patents as an engineer, and
wow,
he had quite a full life.
I was going to say he was busy,
absolutely,
sort of. So now you come from the background that you have as an engineer and aerospace and everything else in it, to writing, to doing history, ancient history, as a matter of fact.
It's always fascinated me.
You just came out of one and just walked into the other?
Well, I had at one time been wrapped up in some political activities. Not that I say I've completely quit them, but I wanted to undertake the research and looking into my great-grandfather's theories and his life because of all the questions I get. I get quite a few emails asking me questions about this and that, and maybe in 2005 I decided to get off my butt and start to do some research on it, and I have a website out there with all the information that I've been collecting. And I learn more every day because individuals write me and they tell me another little tidbit and opens up a new door and a new avenue of research, and I can find out a little bit more and add it.
That's a good thing, though. When you have somebody in the family that already started the water going downhill, you just happen to be the water that just keeps going.
Well, I'm like I said before, I can't say I agree with everything he says, but I can look over his theories, and I don't have to immediately reject them because they might sound a little different. I don't have to make a value judgment on everything that he wrote about.
Was there anything that he wrote in that you thought was a little off the wrong side?
Yes. Well, for instance, he believes the sun is a cool body. And like, another fact was that the mountains were raised only 14,000 years ago. I'm not. Some of those things just don't pass muster.
Well, you also spoke before, Ned, about the plates, the movement of the plates and things. And we all know that when they move, ground moves, mm-hmm. mountains get bigger. Hey, that's the way the planet's made.
But then again, if there was a different size to Mu, as opposed to being the enormous size of what James wrote about, if it was smaller, catastrophes on a smaller level might not be as hurtful, or as civilization ending, or and the evidence thereof might not be as easy to dismiss as an entire continent the size of what James proposed would disappear. So maybe a smaller continent could have disappeared and doesn't require all the evidence that the big continent requires.
The way I got it from someone who actually went into, they were doing into a lot into the plates and things in geology as far as the actual plate placement, they were talking about the Ring of Fire and all that stuff. And when we were getting into it, Ned, it didn't seem anyway that it was too far fetched to say the planet could have been almost as big as Australia, because if there were like line islands in between it, they could have used that as like a step, steps to go back to say Australia or over to, any other place in that around, and that they weren't too far from somewhere else they could land the boat if they had to.
Well, some people place the continent of Lemuria, that they call it, or Mu, as almost touching the Asia and South America and
that's
North
huge.
America.
Yeah, that is huge.
That's a bit big.
Yeah, it's like putting the United States right in the middle between the two of them.
I think much bigger than that too.
Really?
Absolutely.
Wow. So that's pretty big. And for that to sink, well, you know what? I tell you something. I'm sure you know exactly what I'm saying, but the audience doesn't. If you take the size of the plate that's in that area, that's around the area that they call the Ring of Fire, that plate is huge.
Absolutely.
So if something's going to sink, it could be that big and go under the water. But then again, you know what I was thinking of too? Because this is coming off, of course, just like anything else, that the Earth has cycles. So, of course, we have... it goes cold, it goes warm, it goes hot. All this stuff they're yelling about climate warming and everything else. Okay, yeah, okay. So we're helping it a little bit by being a bunch of dirty buggers down here. But on the other hand, this is something that it's the planet evolving, and it goes through these cycles, depending upon where it is in the universe and depending upon where it is in the solar system and all that kind of good stuff. If they came off an area of time where all that ice was melting, it just could have been that maybe the island didn't sink. Maybe it did sink, but the water kind of helped it a little bit more because there was more water.
That a smaller area. I concur.
Yeah, I mean that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that look, if somebody had a warning or some kind of a thing that like something was going on. And I'm quite sure that this stuff didn't happen like the snap of a finger. You just don't sink a whole, whole place like that quick. They would have been able to get in a boat or get in something and get lost, get off.
One would hope.
Yeah, I think this is going to be something that was a little too far. If everybody wants to go into your say social media and that, or get your books, where do they go?
Well, they can go to jack.churchward.com, my website, and there should be a link there to the bookstore, and I even have signed copies that I'll send out.
Excellent. And you also have, there's also links to the Mu.com.
my-mu.com.
And his podcast?
And I do have a podcast. Writing this book this year and some of the other projects I've been doing, my podcast has suffered a bit, but I hope to get back with it in the coming weeks and get another podcast, at least my yearly research update.
Yeah, you got to send us over the links.
Absolutely.
So we can put them up on our blog.
Will do.
Because this is all stuff, and it has to do with the world. It has to do with where we live. It has to do with what we are, where we came from, etc. And, you know, people are really getting very, very interested right now for some reason. It seems to be very timely to be listening and trying to learn more. And your material is there. I mean, it's great stuff.
Oh, thank you.
And thank God you're not the Smithsonian. So, I mean, it's like you read it one day and it says, well, okay, well, we discovered this. And next day they turn around and say, nah, just kidding.
Oh, well.
So, yeah.
We'll eventually get past them.
Yeah, well, we hope we get all by them. So lastly, Annette, out of these books that you've read, Annette, are people really, really, you know, taking to this with you? I mean, you said your podcast that suffered a little bit. That must mean that it was doing really, really well. Are your people on your end, Annette, really excited to see this type of material?
I'm not. The reason my podcast is suffering is that I haven't done an episode in a while.
Ah.
Because I've been busy with other projects.
Cool.
But I still have quite a few people registering for me on YouTube, and I appreciate all their support and comments and any new information I get.
There you go. Now, do you have a regular email address in that? If anybody has any information, anybody heard anything, now this is global, so like, hey, we're talking to people all over the planet. You heard anything about Moo? Or about anything connected to Moo, or any subject that relates to Moo, send it to
jack@my-mu.com. jack@my-mu.com.
Well, there you go. So therefore, Annette, this way you get some more input too.
Outstanding.
Any information that comes in, Annette, we could do that for you too. Meanwhile, you have a very great Christmas, you and everybody else. Now, from what I understand, you got a couple of kids, too, and grandkids and everything?
Absolutely.
Planned a big Christmas?
We're working on it.
I had kids, too, and I went into a little, too, and it's always, you know how I used to plan it? Like 2 o'clock in the morning, Christmas, or Christmas Eve night.
You'd be working on the stuff for the next morning. I was there too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that, because if the kids see this, or if somebody else sees that, or, you know, wives see this and all that kind of stuff, forget it, you get in trouble. So what you got to do is you got to crawl out of bed, make believe you went to the bathroom, and then stay gone for 2 hours.
Well, it's grandma and grandpa now, so the parents get to take care of the kids.
Still, they slip. Kids always slip. You know how it is. Yeah.
But so I'm there to back them up.
Yeah, right. All right. Thank you very much, Jack, for being on the show, Annette. I really appreciate you being on the show. And everybody else, Annette, the chat box is going crazy with all your information. Your links and everything are in the chat box, put on, believe it or not, by fans in Australia.
Thank you. Thank you
so
very much.
There you go. So you're wailing. Jack, you have a very good Christmas, blessed Christmas, blessed New Year's. And we'll see you in 2014.
Absolutely. Have a Merry Christmas, too.
All right, Jack. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Everybody, listen. This is what we're going to do. We're going to take a little bit of break. And what we're going to do is we're going to come up with Dr. Elisa Medhouse. Her book, My Son and the Afterlife, is something you have to hear about. This is something you will be on the edge of your seat. And you'll probably be laughing at sometimes too, Annette, because we have a lot of great things to talk about. Everybody out there, if you want to call into the show, now here's the number. The number is 843-606-1314. I'm telling everybody, call in. There's going to be questions. If you have a question, don't just write it in the chat box. Call us. We're here. We'll answer the phone. We'll be right back. This is the Bob Charles International Show on Sunday, 3 days before Christmas.